Let's get corrupted. What is going on, everybody? It's your boy Joe with Meteoric Serpents coming back at you for another episode of the Colubrid Corruption Podcast. Guys, I hope you're all doing well this week. Life keeps rolling over here. Got some cool stuff going on with the collection. In terms of couple eggs on the ground. I don't want to talk about those because I talked about it on the pre-recorded episode I did, which you can now watch over on Patreon. So quick plug there. First link in the description goes to the Meteoric Serpents Patreon. You get early access to pre-recorded podcasts and just a cool group chat with all a bunch of cool people. And our guest is actually a part of the Patreon tonight, and we'll talk about the guests in a few minutes, but thanks for being here. If it's your first time watching, make sure you hit that like button. Make sure you hit that subscribe over on YouTube. Always helps out. We're getting closer to that 1100 mark by the day. It's greatly appreciated. You could also check out this podcast on all the major audio podcasting platforms like Apple, Spotify, things like that. And then let's see. Also, guys, make sure you're supporting USARC, USARC Florida. Those are the organizations that fight for our rights to keep our reptiles, do everything we do with the animals that we love. You never know when legislation could hit in your area or federally. Make sure you go support. In the description and also right under my face right here has my at to all my social media. You can pretty much search Meteoric Serpents everywhere or just search Colubrid Corruption and you'll probably find my stuff that way as well. Give me a follow everywhere. Instagram is probably the place I'm the most active. I have Facebook as well that gets like all my posts from Instagram get filtered over that way. And yeah, you can check out my Morph Market, TikTok, all that good stuff. And yeah, again, shout out the Patreon members, again, first link in the description below. Always appreciated. You could also do what Shane did, and I appreciate Shane. If you want to do like a little one-time thing, you could throw a super chat on the YouTube videos, which is always cool. Thank you, Shane, above all scales. Shane has a snake for me. It's a ball python, but Shane does have a snake for me, so appreciate you, bro. Thanks for being here. And then we also have Jason Keller in the building tonight. What's up, Jason? Appreciate you. Former guest of the show as well. We got Adam from Ivory Colubrid Co., another Patreon member in the building tonight. So always appreciate Adam's support. He was one of the first. So, yeah, thank you, Adam. We got Andrew here in the live chat. I know Andrew listens to it on the replay. Good to see you in the live chat. And we have Mike from Solid Serpents. Always good to see you here, man. Let's see what else I'm forgetting beforehand. Just to kind of talk about my guest real quick. I'm sure you guys saw the thumbnail already. Brock from Morphinary Arts. He's been one of my best friends in the hobby over the last few years. We met because we live very close over in Florida. Over in South Florida, he's got some killer ball python projects, like genuinely. Even if you don't like ball pythons and you go check out Brock's page, you're going to see some cool stuff. I promise for all the non-ball python people. So go check out his Instagram, Morphinary Arts. But before we bring him on tonight, we have our hashtag Colubrid Corruption of the Week, which this was a fun one to see when I was scrolling through. Let's see, Queen City Constrictors, always cool to see the young ones get started with reptiles early. That's a what is it? It's an indigo or some kind of Drymarcon. Oh yeah, it is an indigo. That's awesome. Always cool seeing young ones with getting into reptiles early, so always super cool. I started this hobby when I was 10 years old, so I always like seeing, obviously the adults are into it around here, but it's always cool when you can get kids started young, because I think it just leads to a lifelong passion for reptiles. So yeah, super cool. But yeah, guys, again, hashtag Kluber Corruption. Go check out Queen City Constrictors. If you, you know, if you put that hashtag on your Kluber photos, I feature one post a week. You get a little shout out from me and get featured on the video here. So yeah, super cool. But without further ado, let's bring our guest on for tonight. And again, welcome my buddy Brock of Morphinary Arts. What's up, Brock?
Joe, my guy. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. How's New York treating you?
Not too bad. You know, it's what was that?
Is it still cold up there or what?
A little bit. Here and there. During the day, it gets warm. If the sun's out, it's getting like, you know, like mid-60s, which is actually nice. But pleasant.
Mid-60s is cold.
No. Mid-60s is a pleasant temperature, so I'm totally cool with it. But early in the morning, like when I go to the gym, I wake up and it's still cold and windy and sometimes rainy, and I'm just like, you know.
Yeah. I tell you, every Wednesday when I go pick up Brats, I get sad because I don't see you anymore. So
I know.
It's nice to see you on here again.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah, Brock. So, you know, I was kind of saying beforehand, I mean, we've kind of grown in this hobby together. Yeah. We kind of both got into it heavy, close to the around the same time. And obviously, we lived super close. We were only 20 minutes away from each other down in Florida. But I'm assuming a lot of people watching besides the V Unit family, most of the people watching this probably have no idea who you are. So can you give a little background of yourself, how you got into reptiles and how that kind of took you to where you are today?
Yeah. So, I'm Brock Pearl Champagne. My company is Morphinary Arts. The concept behind it, I was an executive chef for a long time. So I kind of combined the culinary arts with, you know, snakes and morph and came up with the name and the little logo and everything. So that's kind of where it came from, kind of the passions of the reptiles and the cooking. I got into reptiles in 2021. I actually bought my first reptile in 2021. I had always wanted one as a kid. I remember going to the pet store, riding my bike out there and looking at the snakes all the time. But my German immigrant mother that raised three kids in the ghetto did not approve of such of such things. So I was never able to have one. And then I remember it coming back up again when I was married to my ex and she wasn't having that. So then I was divorced and living on my own. And the kids actually came up and said they wanted a pet snake. And they had seen a wild one at their grandma's house and they were like enamored with it. And I was like, oh man, like I remember those times. So I took them. It just so happened there was a Repticon show that weekend, like right next to us. So I took them there. And they were holding snakes for the first time. I thought they were going to be freaking out because this was just like kids saying they want to do something. And they loved it. And,
yeah.
And then I got sucked in too because I thought this was the coolest thing ever. And it kind of went from there. So we started with ball pythons and we got into that. And we were, we're still, that's our main thing. We're still heavy into ball pythons. But then, like you said, you and I met probably about a year, maybe 8 months, a year past the first one. We met through through Trap Talk, shout out MJ.
In like 2022, we met.
Yeah. So it was about a year after I had gotten in. And like I said, shout out MJ. We met through the Trap Patreon.
Yeah.
And we were able to connect and then just hanging out with you for, talking with you every day for the last few years. You know, the corruption, that's kind of where the name of the podcast came from, too. I mean, you're constant talking about and showing colubrids, and then I started seeing stuff that I was like, man, like that's cool. Like that is a cool animal. So after kind of going through that and then understanding, there was just kind of a point too where it's like you got to diversify. I don't believe that any keeper should just do one species. I think it really makes you a better keeper when you're keeping different species.
Right.
Ball pythons especially require like such little amount of skill to keep them, let's be honest, and breed them. I think it's very easy to get lazy and autopilot with them. So adding in the new species, I think, made me a better ball python keeper on top of it, but just a better snake keeper in general. And I was able to take things that I really liked. And here's, I'm sure that this is going to be like a question now. I'm going to steal thunder from the future from one of your questions. But like one thing
Yeah.
that I really like about colubrids and that community since they got in, ball pythons, right? It's a financial chase. No matter how much you like them and enjoy working projects, it's still a financial chase, and you're really pursuing to be the first one to hit stuff, and you got to hit these combos early before the price crashes and all that. And it makes the keeping experience not as enjoyable or fulfilling. And I think you also then start cutting corners. You're breeding things early, you're power feeding and all that stuff. But when you're dealing with colubrids, I mean, that's not what it is. You're really
Yeah.
breeding these be for the love of the species, for the enjoyment of keeping them, for what you're creating. So I got, I mean, my cribbos, I mean, they're coming up on a year now. I mean, there's 3 more years till I'll even think about breeding them. And it's like there's no rush, and you just get to really enjoy them and watch them grow and learn them. And I think that's, if you're only keeping ball pythons, you're really missing out on, I think, some of the enjoyment of keeping reptiles and watching them grow and learning them and their behaviors and kind of growing with them. Like my cribbos, how they've gone just from moving them from their V18s they were in and then moving them to the 28 quarts, and how their behaviors changed. Just
Yeah.
moving them in, and then now watching how confident they've become, and now they're coming out, and you'll see them out in the daytime looking around and searching. When I reach in to get them, it's not this giant runaway as fast as we can anymore. They're way calmer, and that's come with age and the change of environment. I just think there's so much awesome stuff you can learn as a keeper, and really get in depth with keeping animals and what husbandry and what I think reptile keeping should be versus that endless pursuit of money that ball pythons is. So
Yeah, 100%. All that to say, I don't want to take away from, your accomplishments in the ball python community, because you came in and you made a splash, for sure, in the ball python hobby. Obviously, for anyone who hasn't seen Brock's Instagram, which I'm just gonna pull up and we'll kind of scroll through and talk about things. Brock's primary focus is the Ultramel gene in the ball pythons, and like I was saying in the intro, I think anyone would be hard pressed to say like that's not a cool snake. People who even don't like ball pythons, I mean, the Ultramel stuff that you're working with, A, the quality is top notch, and B, I mean, it just looks super cool.
I took, at the time when I was getting into it and decided what I kind of worked with. I mean, I went with what I liked, right? So it was no different than when I was picking out my colubrid species. I picked what I liked, and then I invested in buying quality from the right people and buying the right animals. And then, I've gotten lucky and made some really awesome examples, and it's
Yeah.
people have noticed it. I think I've made a big name on what Ultramel is and what its potential is and how important it is to the hobby. So there's some shifts I'm making, because there was definitely some things that I did that was some of that money chase, but I still want to stick to what I'm passionate about, which is really that a lot of those Ultramel projects and Ultramel
Right.
clowns and Ultramel pies, and really trying to get those purples and those oranges and just continue to showcase that. So
Yeah. And when you were getting in, I feel like you did, and I've heard you articulate it before, but you can for others as well. Like, you really did your due diligence as a legit keeper to do your proper research, really learn everything, ask questions of other people, and learned how to breed ball pythons, and you hit the ground running extremely quickly. If I remember correctly, you got eggs in like your first year of
I
keeping,
had three I
essentially.
had three clutches I had three clutches in 7 months, 8 months.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it was I think anything I personally anything that I'm going to pursue and go after, I want to be the best at it. And I've talked about that before. Like when I go under something, I want to be the best at it. So if I'm going to put my time and especially my money and energy into something, I want to know, I want to be an expert at it as much as you can, right? So it was
Right.
it, in today's day and age, with the amount of information that's on YouTube and on the internet, you can find pretty much anything you need, right? And then it becomes where you can really take advantage of the community aspect, which is what a lot of people really love about this hobby. And you meet the right people and you partner yourself with the right people. But again, you got to do your due diligence on them, so you're not putting yourself with somebody who isn't the right person, but you surround yourself with the right people and you continue to learn from them as well as the information you've done, and you put yourself in a really good position. I don't think, especially with how expensive some of this stuff is, like when we're talking about the investments that people are making in snakes, and then they come down to when it's time to breed and they're asking basic questions about how do I pair, how do I make an egg box, what temperatures do I set incubators at? Like, you should
Right.
know that before you ever considered spending the amount of money that you did.
Oh,
I
yeah.
just think that's a flaw that a lot of people have, and then it becomes, what did you do it for? I want to know how to keep these animals the best that I can. I want to be successful at them. I want to give them the best care that I can. That's, on top of also the amount of money you spend on it, you should just know because of that. But if you're going to give these animals their best life and their and treat them with the respect that they deserve, you have to do things like that. You really need to put in the time and the research. And then on something we kind of were speaking about a little bit earlier in the group chat, like if you're going to sell, like you're going to sell, you need to understand what the market is. Like, market
Yeah.
research is critical for any business that where you're going to sell something. And the amount of people that are just completely delusional with the prices they're putting on things still, or the things they're making, like, you're clearly not putting in the market research. So it becomes a question of how passionate really are you about this, when we're seeing animals in poor conditions where people are posting up, urate soaked tubs and things like that, right? If you know
Yeah.
what I'm talking about, like, just, and then trying to defend that behavior. And then on top of it, you also have no idea where the market is at this point. Like, how committed are you really to it? Or are you just trying to make an image for yourself? And I think that's a great thing about keeping another species and keeping colubrids and things like that. They will humble you, and you need to know, you got to be on top of your shit, and you got to be really passionate about keeping them. It's not about, let me just have a tub with some cocoa, throw a rat in once a week, and they'll be fine. Them damn
Yeah.
Dromarchions, I gotta be in that tub every day, because
Yep.
they shit so damn much. And but it's a great experience to have with that. So.
Big time. Yeah. Part of why I wanted to have you on, and if for everyone who saw the thumbnail, I kind of call this segment the newly corrupted, and Brock's only the second person to be on that segment, which is really just a normal episode, but it's for, I think it's cool to have the perspective of newer colubrid keepers, even if they haven't bred anything, especially if they're coming from other species, because I think it puts into perspective for others who may be in that position of wanting to take the leap. Can I really do this? Is this feasible? So before even you got into the colubrids, you dove into a different species first, and not even a snake. Now you're chameleons before any of the colubrids, right?
Yeah, so that taught me a lot, and it's still teaching me every day. Chameleon, I saw them. They're so gorgeous. If you've never seen some of the chameleons, like, some of the colors you see on them, you assume are as AI or it's fake. No, they're very, very real. And the
Yeah.
colors that can come out of these things, and they're just, you sit there and you hold freaking super worms in your hand, and they shoot their tongue freaking 3 feet across the cage and take it out of you, like, and then they crawl on you, and they're just like little tree lit, like little tree dinosaurs, dude. They're the coolest animals ever, but holy shit, are they fragile. Adults, males, no, but the babies and the females, my God, it has humbled me as a keeper. I remember I got my first clutch of chameleon eggs pretty quick. It was like December 2022, and then they incubate
Okay.
for 6 to 12 months, right? So then they incubated for 8 months, I think, because
No,
they
not
start 7 months.
22, 23.
Yeah, you're right, you're right, you're right. 23, you're right, 23. And then they hatched last year in July. So after, it was like 7.5, 8 months before they started hatching. And it was, you learn really quickly, man, if you're not on top of your shit and the mistakes you made. I made a couple of mistakes and how I handled them, and the babies all crashed out and died within a week of each other. And they were around for a month, and then I made a mistake. And that was because there's factors, right? You listen, and here's another thing, right? So you do all the research, regardless of what species you were talking about. You do all the research and you gather as much information as you can. But in the end of the day, it's also the information you're getting is not in your facility. It's not in your
Right.
conditions. And there's a lot of things you got to take in. So on that, in that case scenario, I learned an important lesson that I really, especially with new species and things like that, I've really got to take into consideration, okay, what is it being said? and how they're being kept, but where are they being kept too? And then how am I going to be keeping them? So I had an issue where I put them in an area that had too much of a draft from the AC, so it chilled them out too much and killed them all. But I put them all in exactly the way it was supposed to be and kept them in exactly the way it was supposed to be and read, but it took me until after that to realize, like, oh, there was a mistake I made. And
Right.
very humbling experience. And it's stuff, but it's stuff you learn as from a keeper. And I think this is again why it's important to have other species, because now every species I have, I'm putting more thought into, right? And now that's become a normal routine for me. Before I started picking up the colubrids and all that, it became a routine. Like, how is it going to work in my setup, and how can I give them the best, the understanding, the total suggestions, like how do I make it work in mine? So
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know you've told like the horror stories with the chameleons between the females egg binding and like and the babies crashing and just waiting that long for those eggs, and then they may not hatch, or if they do, they die quick and stuff
So
like that. So
this clutch I have right now was laid back in December. The first one hatched 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry, this was late in July. So the first one
July.
hatched. So then the first one hatched 2 weeks ago. So we were at all, like, 9 months, right? One baby hatched, and it's been 2 weeks, and no other babies have hatched. I told right as we were doing sound check, I looked, and a second one finally started
Yeah.
pipping. I was like concerned at a point that nothing else was going to come out. I mean, it's been 2 weeks, and they usually don't hatch that far apart. But it's like, okay. And unfortunately, mom, she got what she was gravid. She was paired and gravid, and then she passed because she egg bound. And female chameleons have a known issue of egg binding, and so I don't have any way of repeating her genetics. And she was a super powerful, super they're not morph powerful, but lineage powerful
Right.
animal. So now it's like, and she laid six. This clutch was 16 eggs. 9 of them have made it to this point. And now it's like, man, can I keep some of these to keep her genetics or her lineage around and not lose that, you know?
Yeah.
And just on top of it, as have I improved as a keeper in the year since the first ones crashed out and died, you know? And so it's a big challenge for me to make sure that, you know, I have improved. So my setup is completely different. I have them in a completely different room in the house. I've changed everything about it, and like I'm confident that it's gonna go this time, that we're gonna go this time.
Nice.
So
There we go. Yeah. All right. So time to get into kind of the topic of this podcast is really the colubrids. Now, you could have gone on your merry way and done ball pythons forever and probably not put yourself to much of a challenge. And I like to give myself credit for helping to corrupt you, but you didn't even choose any of the species that I keep. So I can't even take that much credit because you were looking elsewhere. But what was the thing that made you one? And I'm forgetting off the top of my head, which was the first species you chose? Why and like where did it come about that you said, all right, let's try this?
All right, so the first species, and it wasn't the first species I bought, but the first species I knew I was going to get was dry Markhan. And that
Okay.
was because I was at the zoo, at the Palm Beach Zoo, and they have a cribbo there, and I'm just sitting there watching this thing go back and forth. It's got this like cobra-like head, but it doesn't flare, and it's just back and forth, and it's stopping and getting up and periscoping and making like locking eyes with me and just sitting there for, you know, 30 seconds at a time before it goes and inspects everybody else and comes back. And it was just like this experience where I was like, man, that is badass. That is something I need to get at some
Yeah.
point, right? So then that you and I then your corrupting starts, right? And then your podcast
Yeah.
comes out, and I'm starting to
Yeah.
listen to your podcast. And I remember, so the one that I first triggered me, I was like, oh, I want to do this, was the file snake episode with April.
Yeah.
And she was on, and that species just sounded freaking so cool, and she really sold it as this incredible animal, intelligent. It's ball python husbandry. That was a big deal because now I don't have to change anything. It's the humidity, the temperatures, the substrate, the tubs, everything.
Right.
It's I just need some extra hides and a humid hive because they like super high humidity, right? But it's ball python husbandry, and I was like, man, this is and they're just so cool. Purple's my favorite color. I'm looking at these purple line ones. They're awesome. She's talking about how friendly they are, and how interactive they are. And I'm like, man, okay. I remember talking to you about it, and we were looking at I watched your episode, and we're sending you different pictures and stuff like that. And you have just been constantly encouraging, me and Emilio, especially, like, yo, branch out, get a new species. It's going to make you a better keeper. And all right, I'm gonna do this one. I'm gonna get this one. And then when I got it, I'm like, man, I remember unboxing it. Like, this is the animal was so it was so much different than you pull a ball python and it just sits there, right? And you're
Well,
like,
and a file snake is like even more different than
yeah, with the
a lot
keel
of
scales,
your regular stuff. Yeah, all the keeled scales,
the
the
keel
head shape,
scales,
everything.
the iridescent belly, and the triangular body, like everything about it. And I'm like,
Yeah.
man, look at this freaking snake! Look at this animal! And I was enamored from the beginning. Like, this is so freaking cool. And so I got him after I had him set up, and we were successfully keeping him for a little bit. I was like, okay. And instantly I was okay, dry Marco. And I remember you and me and Emilio, because he was really interested. And then we talked about it so much. I listened to all the different podcasts and everybody you had on that ever talked about dry Marco. I remember asking you stupid questions every day, the temperatures and humidity and substrate and eating, and well, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And we got to a point. I remember when we went to so we go up to Daytona, and I said, like, I'm not gonna buy anything, but if there's some dry Marco on. If there's a crib, a yellowtail, and specifically yellowtail cribbles, those were the ones I liked the most. Of course, I picked the most difficult asshole ones of them all, but they're the prettiest ones. So I was
Yeah.
like, if they're up there, that is something I'll splurge on. It just so happened that they were there, and at this point, we'd been talking about it for 4 months, and I felt confident in my knowledge and ability to keep them. They were hatchling babies. I mean, they're like a month old when we got them, and it's. What a crazy experience to grow with them. When I got them, I mean, they're so small, the babies. They're like little worms. And I remember going
Yeah.
back and looking at a picture. And now the snake's like 3.5 feet, and it's big. It's taking down. It's eating hatchling ball pythons. It's
Yeah.
this big. It's this big snake. And it's nowhere near how big it's going to be in another 3 years from now. And
Yeah.
like I said, their personality changed from now where they've gained confidence, and I put them into a new enclosure. Just that. Oh man, it's the experience. I love my ball pythons, and I'm always going to work with some number of ball pythons, but it is a completely different experience with keeping some of these species. And I think if you are looking to get into something else and you have the interest in other species for one reason or another, do your research, understand the proper ways of keeping them, and tap in with guys like Joe and listen to the show and get yourself the knowledge, go into Joe's Patreon and really ask the questions and get yourself the knowledge. But you got to do it, man. What how
Yeah.
it changes for you, what it can change for you as a keeper, and just the experience you have with it, it's completely different. So then after that, then I was hooked when I brought them home. So then I
Right.
remember going through, I just started looking up colubrids on Morph Market, just going through every one. I remember sending them to you. What's this one like? Is it an asshole? Because
Yeah.
regardless, I hate getting bit. I'll say that. I'm this giant man, but I can't stand getting bit more than freaking anything in the world. So I'm like,
Brock is
okay,
a
we're gonna have
foot taller than me for anyone who doesn't know in real life.
literally.
There's a great
So
picture of us standing next to each other, and it's a gigantic difference.
I remember going through it. I was sending you pictures every freaking day, and then I finally got to the one that really had taken like really stopped me, and that was the Ridley Eye Cave Dwellers. I remember we had looked at Blue Beauties before, and you were like, assholes, and I was like, ah, okay. And I sent you these ones, you're like, not as bad. And I was like, okay, we're in here.
Yeah.
So and then I got a pair popped up on Morph Market from JRP, Jonathan Pickerel Reptiles, or JPR. Super awesome breeder, super quality animals. And I jumped on it right away because I was like, okay. And now I could take care of colubrids. It's the same, and those are the my female is a bitch, and I have a difficult time handling her. But they're
Yeah.
such a cool. They're watching their OCC as they've grown. The color change on them is incredible. It is
Yeah.
absolutely incredible how they've changed in color as they've grown. It's been absolutely incredible. So now there's still one colubrid on my wish list. It's the only species that it seems to be gate kept still in the colubrid world. So
You're
hopefully,
barons, right? You're looking for
yeah,
barons?
blue barons. I can get males, but I want a pair because I want to I want to experience the interactions and the breeding and all that. That's why I have a pair of all the Kluvers I have now. I have a pair
Yeah.
of Files, a pair of Ridley-I, a pair of Kribbos. So I want a pair of them. Hopefully this year somebody will produce them and not charge an arm and a leg or ship them all to Europe, and I can get a pair. But that's the last species on the colubrid wish list for now, until I have more space. So.
Yeah. So to kind of put this in perspective for everyone, Brock got this animal in August, mid-August, and it was probably a month old.
Yeah, I mean, it
And
was.
look how big it is. So we're looking at a yellowtail Kribo on the screen. I know this is like basically Brock's favorite snake in the collection, I think. But
It's
yeah, man, I
between that
mean,
and the files.
okay.
Yeah. The
So, you
files
know,
are
the
just
thing
so.
about,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was. The files are just so. Their interaction and how they handle is just so freaking awesome. Like, they're just so. They're like an upgraded ball python, because they don't ball up and they move with you, and they're intelligent and all that. But they're still super docile and everything, and they're not like terribly skittish and trying to run away. So
Right.
it's but the, but yeah, but Kribbles are just freaking. What a I posted to them eating a ball python at one point. I was like, this the Kribbles are freaking metal. They're just so metal.
Yeah. Dude, but I mean, like, you couldn't have picked a species more different than a ball python
Yeah.
than a Kribo. So that's like the other thing is like you really went headfirst into colubrids because Drymarchon are like the extreme of colubrids coming from a ball python, which is like the basic easy python to take care of. So what was that like? Just like, so you did all the research, you knew everything, and I know you knew everything beforehand because like you were prepared to take this on, and you've never taken on something that you weren't prepared to in this hobby. And I could say that about Brock like 1,000%. But what was it really like when you actually got the snakes and then started seeing all this stuff that like you knew you were preparing for, but like you didn't have the hands-on experience yet?
They are fast, like beyond it, especially coming from only keeping ball pythons, and then I had the files for a couple months before I got Kribbos. Dude, they are so fast, and you have to be. So I one of them shot out of the tub and got into the rack at it's happened one time, because I learned my lesson after
Yeah.
that. But you it's like I was I didn't I couldn't even believe how quick, like, it just was so quick. And you learn. I think that was the hardest thing to adjust to, is how fast you have to move. You have to really commit when you go in there and pull their hide. Like,
Right.
you are committing to grabbing them in that moment. I don't care if they flare up on you or they strike at you. You have to grab them, or they're gone. Or they're gone. Like, that,
Yeah.
I think, was one of the hardest things to adjust to. But with hatchlings, with age, they've brought it. They've come down a little bit. They're not as nut job as they were at 3 months
Okay.
old. I learned. I think what like feeding, I thought was interesting. It was pretty interesting. They eat a lot. They need to eat a lot more often. I feed every other day. They shit a lot. You hear it, right? And you see that people talk about it, but it
Yep.
really is all the time. You get the liquid explosive ones over the side of the enclosure, and you got to take them out and clean them and all that stuff. You constantly have to check the water, because they're like projectile shitting all the time, so it could be anywhere. That I think those were kind of some of the things to adjust to that you knew about, but it was just so much different when you ended up keeping them. And then I think another thing that's important on them, that I know if you have a lot of ball pythons, you aren't doing it enough handling regularly. They're an intelligent animal. They understand you. I feel more than a ball python, especially. And the more you handle them, the more they kind of calm and trust. Like, I mean, when you're first bringing them down as babies, it was just. But now you see in the pictures, I mean, they'll wrap up and sit there, and like they'll sit
Yeah.
there for. Once they're cool, they'll wrap around, and then they'll just hang out for 10 or 15 minutes, and then they'll want to readjust and sit, but it's not this constant trying to get away anymore. So.
Right. Yeah, and when it comes to feeding, what have been your choices? Because I've had a couple. In fact, the guest that I pre-recorded with for next week is another dry Marcon keeper, so got some interesting answers for him. But I'm curious, what have you been doing so far with your
So
yellowtails?
mine, and so I feed every other day, and I don't feed the same thing twice. I always mix it up, and I have fed a mix of quail, salmon, tilapia, mice, rat, ASF, and ball python. So they're at the point now. I'll throw in two, like I'll throw in a quail and a fuzzy. And they'll take
Okay.
them both down. I fed them off tongs for a while, but I think what, and this was actually advice I got when I did that dry Marcon show with Emilio too, is that they'll start associating when you open the tub with food. And now I just throw the food in. I open the tub and I put it in front of their big hide because they're usually in the big hide. And they don't, it's not, I don't have this aggressive tail rattling and coming out trying to grab it everywhere at the time. Now, I mean, they'll hang out for a couple of minutes before they come out and grab it. I think that was really good advice to have them not associating constant tub open food, tub open food. And that's really also brought down the when I'm opening them and pulling them out, they're a lot more calm because it's not this trigger in their head that, oh, food, it's food time.
Right.
So
Right.
I think another thing with unfeeding too is handling them is significantly easier after they've eaten than when I know they're hungry. So
Okay.
that's another one.
Have they turned their nose at anything, or are they just savages?
So the male, for the first couple months, he was only taking quail or quail scented pinkies.
Okay.
The female has never done any, and then since then, they eat anything, like
Okay.
absolutely everything I put in there, it is devoured. Unless they're in shed, they don't like eating when they're in shed.
Got
So,
it.
but anything else I put in there, I got. The last time I fed them ball python, they each got a half of one, and they took it down like not even a problem. So the next stillborn babies they're going to get a full one, and we'll see how they
Right.
handle it. It's crazy what they can eat, man, and how much they eat. It's just with their metabolisms being so fast, it is crazy how much, and they're just like always hungry, like always hungry. I've never had them refuse a meal again unless I didn't realize they were in shed when I put the food in. So
Right. All right, cool. And what are your plans for when it comes to like upgrading enclosures and stuff? Because obviously we're talking about a species that gets big. You got them small, so you're gonna get to see the entire life stages of a yellowtail crebo. So what's your game plan with that?
So I'm in between on where I want to go. I think I'm gonna they're in the 28s now. They're gonna go to clear 70s, just in my ball python rack on a level with no heat, when they reach that size. And then it's the size it's from up from there, but I'm not it's gonna kind of depend. If I'm still in my current house, I'm probably gonna do the FB 160 or whatever it is, the boa tub that takes up the full level, that has the clear front on it, because that's what's gonna
Right.
work. In here, I shouldn't be in here by the time they reach that size, in which then I will end up going with a custom enclosure. And depending on where it's going and the size, we've had at the last show in Kissimmee, Emilio and I talked to a couple builder an enclosure builders that had dry mark on. There was discussion about 6 foots and second level being tall enough, having that deck on top if they're utilizing it. Where there's been ones where we've seen people have like custom like. In like under bottom levels made where they can go in and kind of burrow and like bedding down there and all that,
Interesting.
and that they utilize that a lot. So there's kind of still some when they get into that kind of permanent enclosure home, how I want to go about it. But I'm going to we're going to take the best idea that I can from the information that we've gathered and the most successful keepers that we've had, and we're going to deck it out and do the full thing because that's where they're going to be in forever. And I mean, it's a big snake. It's a 9 to 10 foot snake when it's full grown, so it can't have
Yep.
a It can't be in a tight enclosure. I don't agree with keeping adults in 70s or anything like that. Like it should be in a
Yeah,
big enclosure. So
definitely.
worst case scenario, they're going to get the big full level freedom breeder, which is more than big enough. But I hope, hopefully I'm in my living situation and in 3 years is a little bit different and I can really get one of those I'd love to do the enclosure with the drop down and the deck and really have them have all the
Yeah,
space they
that
need.
would be interesting for sure.
Yeah, the question was if they would utilize the deck, because a lot of people say they're just a ground animal, but Emilio kind of built in a deck on his, and it's up there. It's up on it.
Yeah.
And then the builder we were talking to when we were at Kissimmee, he was saying like mine is up laying on that deck and basking on that deck all the time. If they're not
It
just
wouldn't
a
surprise
ground
me.
species. So
It wouldn't surprise me.
yeah, I think it's important, especially with an animal that is that active and that is that intelligent, you know what I mean? I think you need to give them as much enrichment as you can. And
Yeah.
I'm not one of the ones that say a ball python needs a four, 2x6 and all that and
Right.
UV light and all that stuff. But I do think this is a different situation where that species does need that. That it does need
Yeah.
some of those considerations. And that's why, and that's what you can't have freaking 60 of them. You know what I mean? It's a different keeping the ball python. I got two. I have a pair, and that is all I'll ever have. And I will be extremely happy with that. And if I'm lucky enough to produce one clutch a year and provide those babies to the hobby and help corrupt some other ball python breeders and bring some other people in who can really get into this species. Same with the Ridley eyes and the files. The files are, I'm gonna promote, they're great pets. I'm gonna promote them at shows as pets and really show
Yeah.
some different animals. But the Ridley eye and the Cribbos, like I want, people like me to be able to come and get a quality bred animal on a small scale, where it's not about the money. It's about producing that animal and understanding it and learning it and really having that fulfillment experience from doing it and being able to bring other people into the game, like this has been done for me. So
Right. Yeah, and with the way you've been purchasing colubrids, are you just is your goal to kind of keep Noah's arcing them? Do you think you'll expand on one or multiple species a little bit more than just like a 1.1 group or?
no, I think for me on these, I think 1.1 is good. There's not a financial goal for me to want to continue to produce more of them. And especially, I mean,
Yeah.
some of these things are big, man.
Well, the
And
Kribos, I definitely
the
get
Cribbos
why.
are big. Files, I could do another female. I want to see what the appetite on the market is for them, because there's just not. They're so rare and they're unknown, but they're the most badass snake when anybody holds them. With the keeled scales, they're like a dragon. You know what I mean? It's,
Yeah.
I think if those go well, I could consider getting one of those, because you keep them in tubs. It's not any different. I think the Ridley eyes, to properly keep them when they reach their full size, I don't think I need more than a pair. I also don't think that there's the market for them to justify overbreeding them, in my opinion, for that,
Right.
right? And then as far as the barrens, when I add them, that requires a large, an arboreal enclosure. So it'll be the pair. And that's it. And that's because I
Yeah.
want them, because I want to do
Yeah.
them. So I don't see
No.
myself turning it into a colubrid breeding facility. File snakes, maybe. I'll get that one, because if I can show the world and at least our shows what an amazing snake they are, and they can catch some fire. But hell, if April hasn't been able to make them into a hella well-known name, I'm not going to be able to outdo that. So I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we'll see how the years go because I mean there are plenty of snakes that have just like risen from the ashes when it comes to colubrids with the way the market is. There are some unique species that are gaining way more popularity now. So I think as time goes on, a lot of the unique colubrids are just gonna get a lot more shown in the limelight. Like the bird eaters right now, those are killing it in the colubrid world, and I didn't know they existed until a year or two ago, you know?
There's so
And
many species that are
now
so
everyone
cool.
knows about them.
There's so many colubrid species that are so cool. I mean, if I ended up in a different world where I had a whole ton of space, yeah, I mean, we might be Noah's Ark in several more species, like the oxys, the green, what, a green tail rat, red,
The
red
red
tail
tail
green
green
rat snake.
rats.
Those things are fucking crazy. They're
Yeah.
so the blue one, there's the silver one, like those
Yeah.
things are crazy. There's so many other species that are so cool. I still send them to you all the time. Tigers. Tiger rats are one I want to add at one point. That was another zoo one that I was enamored with. I told Kush
Yeah.
I need some space, but that's something I'm gonna pick up from him 1 year.
Tiger rats are
So
super cool, but
fuck, they're
yeah,
cool.
even the bird eaters, like I know I have to prep myself to put a big enclosure somewhere someday to take care of those guys. And right now, and I'll probably do some form of upgrades in the midst of that, but I know they will need and will deserve a big cage sometime in the future. So for the pair I have.
Do they cohab or do you have to individual
Most of the time they stay individually when you're
them? Okay.
pairing. I know,
Just when you're a parent, yeah.
people, yeah, pretty much.
That is two large arboreal cages.
Yeah. I
So.
mean, maybe you could get away with cohabbing with a pair, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah. I think
But
there's to give, especially so one thing I've gathered in my limited colubrid keeping species, like I said earlier, it's not ball pythons, man. You've really got to dedicate the proper caging and space to them. Same like chameleons. That's why my chameleons is a pair, maybe a 1.2 because you can cohab a couple girls, but the space, I mean, 2 by 2 by 4s vertical and all the lights and
yeah,
everything
and you
else.
have the big decked out
Yeah.
Reptabreezes. Like
Yeah.
your setups are no joke there.
I did not skimp on it and give them little ones. Like some people do like 18 by 18 by 36s. And it's no, I have the big 24 by 24 by 48s with, 30 different perches in there for them to go on
Yeah.
and real plants and fake plants and misters and every freaking light you could get. It's, I think that those species need to be properly and probably taken care for. I think we take advantage. I think a lot of people will take advantage as ball python keepers because of how easy ball pythons are to care for and how much they thrive. They truly thrive on limited space and not being bothered and all that stuff. And it's just,
Yeah.
that doesn't apply to basically any other species. So
Yeah. Yep.
essentially any other species. So.
Yeah. As we're staring down the breeding season of 2025, I know you don't necessarily have any colubrids breeding now, but what's going on within the collection that you're kind of excited about for this year?
So, to hit on colubrids, I'm hoping to pair the files this winter.
Okay.
My female will be 3 this winter, so if she's at the size, I'm gonna start ramping up her food a little bit now and try it. My male's good, and thank God he's still with us after
Yeah.
his hardships, but he's good. I think I'm going to ramp the female up a little bit on her food, maybe start going to 5 days and see if we can't get her paired at the end of the year. So file snake pairing in 2025 is not off the table yet.
Nice.
So, but yeah, for balls, I paired 32 on our last ultrasound kind of session. We were looking at probably 24-ish that were looking good. On a positive note, it looks like all of my major project clutches are all going to go. So it looks like there's going to be, 3 Ultra Clown clutches, 4 Ultra Pied clutches, the DG Clown stuff. So it's looking pretty good. We'll see how it goes. The market's in a weird place.
Yeah,
Some of
definitely.
the stuff that some of the stuff that's not going, I'm okay with because of where the market is. And as long as my project stuff goes that I need to continue my collection and push the project forward for me and for that satisfaction, I'm happy with that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I don't know whether I'm happy that I'm just not getting a lot this year, especially with the move and everything going on. Like I have one ball python female that's gonna go. Just because I could tell with the size she's at, I just don't know when this ovulation is going to happen. But yeah, I just got one cookie, and most of it's for me. I know I'll have to do some shed testing and stuff, and with like the, like you were talking about with the way market's at, not really sure I'm too mad about having mostly stuff for me.
Yeah, I had a lot of clutches because this was kind of like my big year. You buy animals 3 years ago. This was kind of like my first kind of big year, right?
Yeah.
And you've been raising them up for 2 or 3 years. You want to breed them, right? But then you kind of look at it like where the market was when I bought and made this plan is not where it's at today. So maybe it's not the worst thing in the world if some of these don't go that wouldn't necessarily have animals I'd be like super on like excited about holding back, that they were intentional. They're beautiful animals that there's a market for.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of super OD Ultramel stuff, but it's like, maybe where we're at, it's not the end. It's okay.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
So
Yeah. Now, stuff on the Kluber side of things, I think most of the stuff I have is unique enough that I wouldn't be mad at any clutch I could get at this point, but I don't think
yeah.
this year is exactly panning out the way I wanted it to, so it is what it is. I would have liked a Texas Rack clutch, but I don't think I'm getting one. I don't
But
think so, unless I get something late year.
I think we're gonna see a couple red babies though.
Yeah.
So
I we got about 40 more days. So I got
I'm hyped for you on that one, because that's a
yeah.
new species and they kind of broke your heart last year, so I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah. So two good eggs. I gotta sit and wait now. I'm not sure with the temperature I'm at if they'll hatch at 60 or a little bit longer. I'm not doing a damn thing. I'm not touching them. I am
Yeah.
waiting till I see a pip and an egg. And that's the end of the story. And when I
Is
see that
your
pip, I'll go crazy, but yeah.
other girl looking like she's gonna go or
She
grabbing?
did not, she didn't have a prelay shed. She is 100% gravid. When I lift her up, I could see the eggs in her stomach.
Oh shit, okay.
You could, cocci are very, if you actually look at them the right way, you can see the eggs like clearly just because of the way their stomach is white, but it's also clear-ish to a point where I could see the shape of the egg in the
Oh
body.
wow. So you're
Yeah, they're
this is
interesting.
gonna be a cocci year for you then.
It could be. It could
I'm
be
here for it.
if the luck is there. I just need all fertile on the second clutch. That's
And they're such a cool, unique animal, and they're so pretty too. I mean, once they're established, they're gonna fly off the shelf, because then and they're coming from you too, like
They're all staying
that's
with me
so
until
cool.
Colubrid Fest. They're not available until then.
Look at that, people. Now you gotta be at Kluber Fest if you want the meteoric cocci.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere till Colubrid Fest. I could say that for sure.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Hopefully you
But
don't pre-sell all of them before Kluber Fest, and then you can show some of these.
well, if I do, they just can't pick them up till that day.
Yeah, so at least they're on the table then. Ain't nothing wrong with
Yeah.
that.
The only option is pick up at Colubrid Fest, and then once that show is over, then I will ship animals
Yeah,
if there are people waiting. But
that'll be cool. When
yeah.
I know I asked you this before. Do you think next year you're gonna have the rhinos be able to go? That I'm super hyped for you on too.
My female is definitely ready. Who I don't think is old enough, who I'd be scared putting in there as the male. I don't think he's
Okay.
big enough
Okay.
to mess with the female. The female is 1,000% ready. She's gained so much size since I got her. Yeah, she's a great animal, but the male is the question. But honestly, maybe I'll usually people cohab them at that point, especially when they're like brumating. So
Okay.
may I'll see how big he gets by the time brumation swings around, and we'll see. But I could be taking a big risk by that if that female decides he's
She's
not big
hungry.
enough to be a mate. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
if you think it'll be a risk, I'd just wait, but I know that's
Most likely, unless he puts on size quickly, which he has consistently been just like putting on more and more size, but it's a matter of where he kind of goes from here.
Yeah, that I'm excited to see you do that, and then you have next year you'll have a shot at your quad Texas rats.
Mostly triple. I don't have a quad. Oh wait. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I have the 1.1 of quads. Yeah,
Yeah,
so
so
I'll have that going next year.
that's insane.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, I know you're the Texas rat guy, so you
Yeah,
gotta
one of
we
them.
can't we can't nah, you are, for me, you're the Texas rat guy. So we can't not talk about that. So
Yeah, no, that's gonna be fun. Obviously, guys, for those of you who don't know, I talk to Brock literally every day. So Brock knows everything that's going on my collection. I, for the most part, know what's going on over at Brock's. He's got so many snakes at this point that I kind of just lose track. But let me tell you, Brock is poised to have one hell of a year in terms of breeding, especially on the ball python side of things. I'm very excited for when he eventually gets the colubrids up and he's able to experience that. I think hatching baby colubrids is just, it's a little bit different than the ball pythons. I don't know. I always get a little more, they're smaller eggs, they're smaller babies. You get to see the growth like a lot more, obviously. Like the ball pythons, obviously, they put on size and they get big, but starting off with a little worm and getting them up to these impressive animals is definitely rewarding in my opinion.
100%. Yeah, just looking at the dry mark on and on the Ridley eye and how much they've grown since I got them, and
Yeah.
it's impressive and it's fun to watch. So
Yeah. How are those hold on, I'll pull it up if I see it. 'Cause you got the Highland type phenotype of the Ridley eye. You haven't posted them in a oh, okay, here's one. Hold on.
They just had a shed. Like I need to take new pictures because the color changes.
Yeah.
It's so crazy, man. The tail, like the blacks on the tail, are so dark now.
Yeah.
And then like the blue, like that the middle section of the body is going more cream than what it's supposed to be as an adult. But
Right.
then like I don't, especially the male has like this blue weaving in his
Okay.
cream, and it's so cool. They're so cool, man. Really pretty
Nice.
species. So.
Yeah, especially when they get full size and like the full colors are out. There's the other thing about colubrids is like they a lot of them will get more impressive as they get older. So like you're gonna be pleasantly surprised when those Ridley eye truly get to full size because that range of color just only it intensifies even more as they're adults.
Yeah, most ball pythons are at their best when in their first two sheds, and most colubrids are in their best as full adulthood. And it's different. Also, they get more intense and more vibrant colors, and then they also get impressive size on top of it too. And it's a completely different keeping experience, but I can't explain that enough for anybody that is considered getting the colubrids, man. It is a completely different keeping experience. And it's not like balls. You don't have to have 50 of them. You can have a pair. And you could really, really enjoy them and get to know them and breed them and go through that experience, because breeding every one of them is different. Like the file snakes in my research, which I didn't even know, they'll eat each other. I didn't know a file snake was a snake eater, but in the
Yeah.
wild, I guess they're snake eaters. So you gotta make sure they're the right size, and you gotta watch them because they're gonna fight and bite on each other when you're pairing them up. And you got like that's a whole. It's not like balls where you just throw it in and come back 3 days later. So it's a different experience. The dry Markhans clearly will eat each other if they're not at the right sizes, comparable sizes and eating. So it's it's just a whole different experience, man.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say to you also, which I don't think I ever have before, and I probably should have, of just keeping 1.1s is that you run a very high risk if something happens to one, you immediately hit the reset button because, especially on more obscure species, because the chance of finding that species that is up to the size that you want or the replaceable size of what you had is very unlikely. You're probably going to find a baby. That's the risk of keeping 1.1 of any species. It doesn't even have to be colubrids, but especially more obscure colubrids, because that's what you've been into. Not your corns and king snakes that you probably can get a replacement, but so.
Yeah, you're right. But I think, hell, for me, I don't know. I think that's worth
With the
going for,
Kribos, I
man.
could totally understand why it's not feasible, but
The files, and
yeah.
I had looked at getting another female file. You don't find them, so that is one that I'll have to invest in as a baby and just grow it up.
Yeah. I
If
would
I
say
determine
honestly,
that's important,
I would go 2.2.
with a male too, just in case. Yeah, I
So
probably
what
if they don't
happens
pick.
if you lose that one male?
Yeah, and like I almost did. So, yeah, you're right. I probably should. Good bit of advice. And
You wanna,
they're not terribly expensive. It's easy enough to get them. So.
yeah. You wanna entertain the people with the story of that one? How
Oh boy. Yeah.
we
So,
found that file.
yeah, my male file, he stopped eating and then his head started looking like weird. And yeah, I remember you were over and I'm like, look at this. It's something doesn't like it doesn't look right. He's not eating. I don't really know. And you're looking and you like open his mouth and his head's all swollen, his mouth's all swollen, and we're like, okay, he's gotta go to the vet. I'm like, all right. So you're looking at it and you're like, I don't know, something looks off with the mouth. I don't know what's going on in there. So I take him to the
Yeah,
vet
my perspective, I was doing the old like stick a credit card in its mouth. I was trying to get its
and
mouth open. Something, when I looked at the snake, it looked like something was wrong with the head. I was worried like the skull was fractured to some extent, like something, like the head looked crushed. Something was wrong. Something was off. And when I tried to open its mouth, something was wrong on the left or on the left or
Yeah,
right side,
it was a
whatever, that
flashlight.
like I couldn't get its mouth open properly, so I'm like, something is off here. And then I
Yeah, so
said, you need to take this to the vet because something's up.
we went to the vet, and luckily I wasn't able to get into to the Palm Beach Colubrid guys because they were having a
Yeah.
baby not. But luckily, I got into another big snake keeper, Dr. Erica Garcia. She is Garden of Eden, exotics, reptiles, one and two. But she's down in Cooper City, super knowledgeable, super friendly. So I get in there and she's taking a look. We look at it and yeah, his mouth is just all swollen and all that. So, like, okay, we need to drain it because it's like full, it's got like some pus in it. We need to lance it and drain it. So, and then we're going to have to give him antibiotics and all that. So they go and lance him and have to lance him in two spots. And it's just like pus comes out of there. And I'm like, holy shit, how did this happen? And then
Yeah.
as after it all gets out, we realize his jaw is broken. And like the side of his jaw is like hanging down. I don't know how it happened. I'm assuming he must have broke. I fed him alive. I fed him a live mouse because he preferred live and he wouldn't always eat this frozen thaw. I'm assuming something had happened with in that situation, and he broke it on it when he bit it or took it. I don't know, but that snake was pretty messed up, and I was pretty sure that he was not going to make it. But 12 antibiotic injections later, and the swelling was gone, and he seemed normal. And I gave him 4 weeks after the antibiotic injections, and I threw in a frozen thawed mouse, and the next morning it was gone, and now, 9 weeks later, he has eaten his mouse every single week, and his head, you can still, it's not, it's kind of like a little bulge on the side and all that stuff. I
Right.
think there's a little permanent damage there, but
Damage.
he's healthy as can be, and he made it. I was for sure he wasn't going to make it, and I had felt so bad because I didn't know what had caused it or where it came from. But now, since I guess he didn't eat for long enough, he eats frozen thawed every week now, and I don't have to worry about live. And he will not get it ever again now because of that situation. So,
Right.
yeah, but that was rough. I remember talking to you, man. I thought for sure he was gone, and I felt so bad.
Yeah, I
So.
wasn't sure either. When you finally came back and said like he's good, and then when you said he took a meal, I was just like, snake's good. And I was like, that's
They're not
it.
going to eat. He's not eating if he's fucked up still. So
Yeah.
it was rough, man. I was doing injections on him every 3 days. I was doing like iodine swabs in his mouth, and it was hard because you would open it. I was trying to like I had to like pry his mouth open to kind of hold it like where it hinges to kind of keep it open while I did it. But that piece of jaw was like hanging there, and I was
Yeah.
trying not to like get caught on the teeth and rake it in, but I had to clean out where the lance holes were so it didn't. Oh, it was such a It was good learning experience, I'll tell you what. Good learning
Yeah, I'm sure
experience.
it was. Yeah.
I had never injected a snake prior to that, so I did it enough times. And it's interesting on them because they're keeled, you can just you just go into the skin, it's right there, right? But their spinal column, their vertebrae comes down way further than you'd think it was. So you gotta like come down. But then you're risking the organs, so you got to come like parallel to the skin, so you don't go. proud of myself. I'm proud of myself for having that snake live through that. So,
Damn.
but he's happy as could be now. So.
Nice. All right, Brock. Obviously we talked about I wouldn't be throwing like curveballs or surprises, and like I think the audience understands that you haven't bred these snakes before, and you're only so far your experience has been on a keeping level for the most part. So
Correct.
I think do you have any other things you want to throw in about what you're keeping before we get into some of like the wrap-up questions here?
No, I just think again, I would just encourage everybody that has the chance to watch this on the recap or watching with us that keeps just ball pythons being definitely fine. The colubrid palette is endless. They have an endless way of personalities and what you want to do. I would it's worth do the research and find what speaks to you. And
Especially
if
because we're
you're
on this episode right now, and I hope there are more ball python only people watching. If you want help, send me an Instagram message and I will help you find a species that works for you that you also would want to keep. Like genuinely, I will help you to some extent. So, and my inboxes are always open if anyone has any questions about anything.
And no matter, you will be a better ball python keeper. And if that is only your goal is to be better at keeping ball pythons, this will make you a better ball python keeper. It's totally worth it. So, and also, real quick, shout out to my daughter Zoe.
Oh yeah,
I know
I'm
her
sorry. You know
too.
what? I meant
I
to talk about them too.
no, just shout out to her. She's very helpful. Both my daughters are very helpful with the snakes and everything. But Zoe is a little crested gecko breeder now, and she has
Fun.
her own two trios. And she's been hatching out babies, and she's got lots of clutches. So I'm very proud of her, and very excited to seeing that those crested geckos are actually really fun. I'm not gonna lie, but it's definitely a cool experience. So hopefully, maybe in like 3 or 4 months, we got to let them get some size and see how they're going, because they're coming from some pretty strong genetics, and see how they grow up. There should be some available crested geckos on my page for my daughter. So if that's something you're into, keep us in mind. So.
Nice. And man, I'm sure it's got to be great because they're the ones who kind of got you into the hobby in the first place. And now, to see that they're still in it and enjoy it, because I know with kids, it could sometimes be just a phase, but now it's been 4 years of their life that this is like a major part of it. And they're still like hanging strong and really enjoying the reptiles. So I'm sure you got to be happy to see it.
And they're at every show. They do a really good job talking. They'll take our ambassador animal, and they'll talk to the kids and show them, and they'll explain things to them. They really enjoy it. And even now, Olivia, which is my younger one, she's been hounding me. She wants a tortoise. So that is she is now has her own reptile that she wants, and she came up with that on her own. And at the last show we were at, she was out talking to the vendors who have tortoises and came back and told me all this
Nice.
information about them. So we're on a space wise, I've got to get her a specific one because I need it to stay as small as possible. But like, I definitely support that and having them be a part of that. And I think if you have kids out there, and when you have kids, Joe, you gotta foster that stuff, man.
Oh,
The
yeah.
people that when they show interest in things like that, you've got to go ahead and foster it and encourage it and encourage their discovery. Make sure they do the research. I told her I wouldn't get her anything till Daytona the earliest, so that gives her about 8 months worth of talking about it to decide that she so shout out Kristen. It gives her about 8 months to decide that that isn't exactly what she's into. But even now, she's still looking at stuff on YouTube every day, every week at school, and then coming and telling me about it and information. So it's the same thing that we did with the snakes and how we got there and what I let Zoe do with the geckos. So it's pretty a little reptile family going on. So
That's awesome.
yeah.
All right, man. Cool. So to kind of go through some of these wrap-up questions here. And especially you're gonna like some of these. It's 2025. You and I talk about the market, the ball python market, and just general stuff a lot. And part of what we've seen over the last year is a ton of people getting out. And a lot of them are newer keepers as well. It's like they get in, they get out, like it's a race. you've been in it, and you are a quote unquote COVID breeder, as some people would like to call it, but you've really stuck in, and I know you're here for the long haul. So what do you think? What is it that keeps the fire burning and keeps your passion going for these reptiles and continuing what you're doing?
So the first thing is that it is actual passion about the animals and the keeping and the hobby and in the business side of it and everything. Unfortunately, I believe especially ball python breeders that came in during 2020 to 2022, they were sold on a dream, a financial dream, and how much money they were going to make and how they were going to be able to get add stuff to their house and take vacations, and they were going to make all this money on it. And this was what was sold to them. You and I know that that dream was being sold even at the time. And I think a lot of people let that be their passion versus keeping up the animals. They expanded too far. They got too much too quick. People having 100 snakes in 6 months, which we know many, many that are doing that even still. And you can only keep that up so long as you start burning out on the amount of effort it takes to take care of this many animals properly.
And money.
And the amount of money it costs, and then all of a sudden, animals you bought for, you take a DG clown that was 10 grand in the beginning of 2022, you could have one for $500 right now if you really wanted to. That's a hard pill to swallow for somebody that spent that much money, whose main driving factor was money, and that's what really drove them, and they overextended themselves because of the money. So I think it's unfortunate because I don't think I think they gravitated to it because they had a love for the animals, but then they got negatively corrupted on that other side, in that black swan moment of the money that was being made at that time. So, it is unfortunate, but I think you find more people now. If you want to pursue people that are pursuing animals now, it's just especially like colubrids, right? No one's chasing colubrids to make a fortune. You know what I mean? They're doing it because they're passionate about the animals.
Prognosis,
They love the
maybe.
animals. May All right, that's fair. Hognoses are like the bastard stepchild of the
Maybe.
ball pythons. But I think majority of
I
people.
love all my hog nose guests, but I see the prices on those animals. You're in a similar boat with the ball pythons.
Crested geckos is the same thing too. I mean, that's the worst out of all of them. An Xanthic was 30 grand 2 years ago, and it's $800 now. So, the but the like the majority of these colubrid breeders now, you're really doing it for the animals. And a lot of the people that I talk to, it's for the animals. It's not a financial gain. And then you also look at the popularity, like you talked about popularity increasing on species. Like, take for example, a pair of blue barons. 2, 3 years ago could be had for 3 grand or less. You can't touch them for under 5 grand if you can even find a female at this point. Like, that is appreciated. That is appreciated. I'm willing to bet that the bird eaters have appreciated over the last 2 years. I know dry Marcons have gone up in price. It's I think when you're pursuing these things, because you can't keep a million of them like you can ball pythons, right? And you're pursuing them out of passion, so everyone's not producing a lot of them. But then you start seeing these podcasts and you start seeing these shows and you start seeing these people that are posting that are so passionate about it, and that's infectious on other people, and then it drives demand on it. But we're not out here making, 1,000 of them a season, so it's going to continue to maintain some of that price, that desirability, and that interest. And I think that's super important. I think that's a really stable, healthy market versus a race to the bottom market of ball pythons and things like that. And I think what you lose, ball pythons are fucking cool. Like, don't take this as a ball python cash out. Breeding, nothing is what you can do in the actual like project that you have when you do a ball python. Like, nothing compares to that in breeding.
I
You had with
agree.
your
I have
Texas
my
rats, you have
stuff.
had some stuff, but like ball pythons and projects and
No,
things
I
to
mean,
actually
I,
pursue and
yeah.
build and layer, and the science that you can do from a genetic standpoint, like, it's uncomparable. But so much of that is that passion that comes behind that has been lost because it's just a financial, it's a fucking money grab. And it's unfortunate that the species is looked upon negatively by so much of the rest of the other segments of the market, because so many of people have just made it a money grab when it is a very cool species, and it has like working projects in ball pythons is not like working them on anything else. So I love them still. I think they're amazing, and I think they should still continue to, they should be respected and worked properly. So.
Yeah. It's funny you went on that little rant. In fact, I just what
Hold
was
on,
it,
shout out
last
Garrett,
week?
shout out Coiner Exotics, Garrett
Yeah.
in the chat. He's got my Confusion Batman girl I made. He just got it
Oh, nice.
this month, and he got that crazy Confusion cinnamon that I made in the beginning of the season too. That's a good dude right there. Make sure you're following him because he's
Cool.
gonna be making some crazy stuff because I know what he's got for me at least. So.
Nice.
But.
Nice. Hell yeah. I just recorded an episode of Reptile Fight Club with Dr. Julander and Rob Stone over on the NPR network about this very topic. I posed the question is, do breeders sell people a pipe dream? And I prefaced my argument and I took the yes side of the argument. For those who are not familiar with the show, that's kind of how it works. We kind of friendly hash it out about said topic. And I said this is very much mostly ball python stuff, but every point that Brock just made is exactly what I said, and it's 1,000% true.
I'm sad for the species because so many people have a negative look on it, and it's a cool species to keep, and especially a cool species to breed.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that it's been kind of reduced to what it has. So.
Yeah. All right. What would you say the kind of short-term future, next 3 to 5 years or so, what does that look like for Morphinary Arts? Where do you see it going?
I am going to consolidate the collection a little bit. I think it's extremely important to steal from Miguel, all to be always evolving. I think you need to look at where the market is today, and you need to be what you per I said this earlier, what you purchased and planned on 3 years ago doesn't fit in today's market. A lot of that stuff, making
Right.
clown combo, making Batman combos so that you can sell them, and clown combos so that you can sell them. That's not where the market is anymore. And
Yeah.
you need to understand that. You need to be moving kind of with that. So I am looking to consolidate some of my projects and then kind of put in some more powerful animals, less animals. I want to bring down production a little bit from where I've been, but I want to continue pushing forward the Ultramel clown, the Ultramel pied, super blackhead Ultramel stuff, DG clown. I want to continue really pushing those forward and continuing to be on the forefront of the Ultramel move, and the Ultramel project, and then just DG Clown because it is my favorite double recessive animal. As much as I love Ultramel, DG Clown is my favorite, and I want to continue working that and pushing that in a direction. Even if that I, there's a lot of DG Clown out there and the prices aren't where they used to be, and et cetera, but I love that project and I want to continue
Yeah.
working that in the way that I want. So you're gonna have that. I want to have these chameleons dialed down, and I want to be, producing 2 to 3 clutches of chameleons every year of extremely quality captive bred panther chameleons, high color that people can be, they can be happy with to purchase from me and know they're getting them from a good source. I think they're a badass pet. They're super fun. They're super interactive, and I think they're hard to take care of as babies, but once they're properly established, they're not as hard as people make them out to be. Males at least, and just educating people on how to properly care for them, the space that they require, their feeding and their lighting and everything else. I think that's just not done well most of the time, their humidity requirements and all that. And I really want to get them. I want to be able to establish that part of my game. And then, that 3 to 5 years, I want to be producing my colubrids. I want to produce a couple file stakes and triple clutch. So, I want to have my file
Yeah.
stakes and really start showing them as being just a really cool pet. That's not necessarily something you got to buy to breed, but that's a really cool alternative pet. A file snake. No hate on corn snakes and milk snakes, but a file snake is a significantly better. They're not as nutso and going around and spastic, and I just think they're underrepresented in this hobby. As cool as and beautiful as they are, and as cool and unique as they are, they're just underrepresented for an animal that is so docile, calm, handles well, and it is truly a great pet animal.
Yeah.
I want to have the dry mark on. I want to be able to produce a clutch a year of dry mark on. There's not a ton of people that do it, and I think that would be very make me feel really good and accomplished. And then the same with the Ridley Eye. There's not a ton of people that do it. I want to be able to produce a clutch ear, and I have extremely quality examples on my Ridley Eye and on my Dry Markon. And I want to produce really quality stuff and just inspire other people. Got your through you, you know, you on your podcast and making appearances on here and what you're the work you're doing. And I think in 3 to 5 years, just looking at where the colubrids have come in the last 2 years, since we you and I have really been digging into it and how the popularity that they've gained, I can really see them becoming, and I growing even bigger, and I just want to kind of be a part of that to help contribute to inspire anybody that follows me, because I like the ultramelt shit that I wanted that I make. If I could inspire them to, you know, get a file snake or a cribbo, or you know,
Definitely.
to spark that curiosity and that interest, like I want to do that. So, you know, it'll always be this will always be kind of a passionate side project for me. You know, the full-time aspirations and dreams aren't they're not there. It's not something that's really going to happen, but I want to continue hitting this hard the way that I am, doing it my way, fulfilling myself, following the projects and chasing the animals that I love, continuing to build the community with the people that are close to me. It's a weird sweet. My Ridley Eyes musk is not it's not bad. You're right, it is kind of like a weird sweet. That is a strange, I never thought of it that way. That is a strange description, but yes, I agree with that. I'll tell you, the Cribbo musk fucking stinks though. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for
When they
sure.
musk me, that shit stinks. But yeah, so I'm super excited about my position in the future. I want Zoe's geckos, man. You know, Zozo's
Yeah.
geckos on Instagram. Follow her. Zozo's geckos. That's my daughter.
Yeah.
She's really excited about it. And I'm looking for how she can grow herself, her entrepreneurial spirit, how she can learn and gain confidence when she's at the shows and now selling people geckos that she's produced and have people, somebody to come buy that from her. And she made like little bead animals. You know, you were there at the show. She made like little bead
Right.
animals, and she was so scared to talk to people about it. And then she sold one, and it became like she now had this confidence, and it completely, and now she's excited to talk to people and try to sell them a bead animal. And I can't wait for her to have that experience with the geckos, because she's producing really cool shit, because I traded ball pythons for them, so she has nice animals. But they're she's got great geckos, man. She's excited about it, and just watching her continue to grow on that. And yeah, man, it's all about enjoying the process, man.
Definitely.
I don't ever want it to feel like, oh God, I got to go down and do this snake shit. Like, no, I want to continue to enjoy the process. Don't overexpand. Don't grow too large. Make sure I keep things that I am happy with. I don't want to ever open a tub. And like, I would never buy a fucking tiki, and then because I wanted to chase the market, right? Because I think it's the ugliest snake ever. And if I opened that tub, and I'm like, oh God, I can't believe I'm making this. Like, because I wanted to chase the money on that market for a second.
I
Like,
think
no,
that's
don't.
a
Oh.
I think that one's a tough pill to swallow for some people. It's like, especially on the ball python side, is like, if you open every single tub right now, are you satisfied with what you see in there? Krista, if I had a sunset in one of my tubs, I would not be happy looking at it. So that one would be the first one to
Krista, to be
go.
honest, Krista, I was gonna say sunset, but I remember I'm breeding for ultra sunsets, and I think the ultramel sunset's like one of the best animals in ball pythons right now, so I cannot negatively say anything about sunset given that. So
I kid, but yeah, no, definitely. And going back to what Dan said, quality over quantity, I'm gonna let you flex for a second, because how many clutches did you have in 24?
I had 11, actually, I had 11 clutches in 24, and then it actually hit me just 2 days ago, but it's been probably since February. I sold every baby that I made. They're all gone. They're already out.
Everything
And
you didn't keep for yourself.
I actually only held back 5 animals. So I sold 60 animals, all sold. And a lot of that is because I spent the extra money, and I did the due diligence like we talked about in time. I bought almost every I probably impulse bought maybe like 2 animals total, like ever. I bought the best examples of what I wanted, that there was a plan to it. I searched, I found the best examples. It wasn't always the cheapest example. I do jump on opportunities at sometimes, like that chocolate ultramel and that black pastel pin ultramel that I got, but they're also super high quality animals, and it was a good opportunity. But yeah, I think I from what I can gather from when I look at people's comments and what they'll say about me and all that things, like I think I've created, and this was the goal, like I've created a bit of a reputation of having of producing quality, especially in Ultramel, high quality animals. I wait until my animals are, 120, 120, 115 grams to ship out. I want them eating right and showing up at a good size. I keep feed records for all the animals and send them with you, so you know what they ate, when they ate, when they shed, and you have everything for it. When, like Garrett, who was in here earlier, he had a long term, he had a payment plan, and so I fed the animal through the winter, and I didn't maintenance feed it. Like this asshole shit that people do, where you put an animal on a payment plan and it shows up 3 months later at the same weight that you first made your first payment on because the person switched into maintenance feeding. I fed like a whole bag. That bitch is big and she eats and she loves food. And this is like how you establish yourself as a breeder that people can trust and want to buy from. Nothing's worse than getting a little animal that's been maintenance fed that hasn't been properly cared for. And nothing is worse than that. And I've done it and I've had it. And it's just like, how much did you really save? And to hurt your reputation to have people in the chats talking about how shitty your services on how you feed your animals and all that stuff. It's just not worth it. So take care of the animals and take care of your customers, and they're going to take care of you. The biggest compliment you can ever have from somebody is being a repeat customer because they bought from you and they were so satisfied they came back and purchased again. And all of us have, and any every one of us that watches this that's breeding any whatever the animal is that we're breeding and we're selling it, you are in business. No matter if the money, no matter if the money is a driving factor or not, you are in business if you are selling the animals, and you need to make that quality of your customer service needs to be just as high, if not higher, than the quality of your animals. And I just don't. Now I kind of bridged off on a rant, but there's just so many sellers in this game that just do not have the customer service aspect. They don't care. They don't think it matters. And it is just as important. And for all of my repeat customers who've ever purchased multiple animals, or someone who's purchased an animal from me that is looking for the right animal to purchase another one, like, thank you. And I appreciate it. And I'm glad that I did right by you. So.
No, I 100% I agree with everything there.
And that's why I got like 50, that's why I got like 15 animals from Dan from Vision Quest, because there's no fucking better person with the highest fucking quality and the best customer service. He fucking takes care of me. I learned from him too. I learned that from him. There's nobody better, man. So.
Definitely. All right, and then my last and final question. So this one is, we're gonna go straight to, let's say you're talking to a ball python breeder who has never kept a colubrid before. What's your elevator pitch for why colubrids? I know we kind of discussed it a little bit, but like, what's your full blown, what would you say?
Are you satisfied with your skills as a ball python keeper? Do you think that you can get better? Then let me tell you about colubrids. I think the biggest thing that you can sell somebody on who is a ball python breeder is that they will be a better ball python breeder, and they will give themselves more quality. Their animals will have a better time of quality of life, and they will be a more in-tune keeper when they keep a different species. I think it changes how you look at the animals and how you handle them and how you interact with them, how you respect them. I also think the fact that, like, when you just look again, there's so many different colubrids, you will find one that speaks to you, that is like, that shit right there is cool. And if you're it will help drive your passion. And there's so many people have been lost in this hobby, especially on the ball python side, because of the money. I want you to come back to your passion about why you're doing this. And there's nothing better to spark that than picking a new species that you're just like, that is the shit. That thing is so badass. I wish I had it. Don't wish you had it. Have it. Have it. So I think that nothing can spark it better than that. It will drive your passion. It will drive your keeping ability. I think, again, like, you should be fulfilled when you're doing this and when you're working with the animals. There's nothing more fulfilling than when I go play Russian roulette with grabbing the cribos, and then I get them to calm down and I hold them and they're just chilling in my hand. It is extremely fulfilling, man. And I think that we as a community don't talk about it. You do, and Emilio does, and like our little community, we talk about it enough. But as a community, we don't talk about it enough, about how the passion for this shit and how much more passion is driven when you have other species, and you just have other interests in it. Imagine every day if you played, you're a video gamer and you only played one game every day for 5 years.
Yeah, I just feel like one species gets monotonous. It's nice
Yes.
having different things, you know?
Yes.
You get the same behavior every time you open every single tub, and it's like, okay, what's next? And then, you know, sometimes, like, when my collection, not that it feels stale, but it's like I haven't gotten a new snake in a while, right? But it's like, I'm not mad at that because I get to open these tubs every day, and we're looking at so many different animals that it's like, okay, I get a little bit of you and a little bit of that, and it's all different stuff there. And then, you know, goals and different plans for each species. It's fun to have that because I get to do different things within each species, you know?
And you get to kind of be imparted in like a bunch of little micro communities, right? Like the reptiles
Yeah.
hobby. And then there's all these little micro communities that also do that care about whatever species else you have, and you get to meet other cool people and learn other things. And being in the chameleons, there's like three or four other people I talked to that I never would have that have given me so much awesome advice and things like that. But it was also applicable to my keeping in general, not just the chameleons. So it was, it's going to do you wonders. And I think it's really, especially if you're one of those people that's struggling with the passion and the drive. You know, it was another really great example of that is Krista when she got into Chihuahuas. I had never,
Yeah.
we've been talking to that girl for 2 years, never seen anybody more passionate and so just gung ho over getting that species and how much it changed her and how she's feeling about it. Like, I think I want everybody should find that. And if you're just into ball pythons, and as cool as ball pythons are, and as much as I love them, there is something out there that is gonna just freaking it's gonna really drive you. So.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think everyone's gotta find it. I think this is like weird to say because it shouldn't be like that, but I feel like it's you know, how I have like my Texas rats, that's like I call that my thing. I feel like it's just boring to have ball pythons be your one and only thing, you
100%.
know? Yeah.
100%.
But it's nice to have diversity.
And it's no
No matter
knock on
what
them.
animal it is, it could be a
Correct.
lizard, it could be other stuff, you know.
If you only had Texas rats, you'd probably be bored too.
A
Like,
100%, I would be.
yeah. And it's like the diversity, especially, I mean, we're reptile keepers. I don't want to just be a ball python keeper. It's a different, I mean, we're a different world. And even, you know, people, so many people got different species of dogs. And they have three or four dogs because, you know, they're different, the different personalities and interactions they have
Yeah.
with them. I think you gotta embrace that and really let it grow. Find your thing, because, and if your thing is ball pythons, it still ain't gonna hurt you to keep something else that's exciting.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yep.
Right, man. Well, this was a great episode. I really appreciate you coming on. I know, I know when you haven't bred stuff, you could feel like you're out of place on this podcast, but it's my podcast and you're my boy, so
I appreciate that.
yeah. Plus I think this is good for other newer keepers to help them. It may be because maybe other people are feeling down about their collection. Maybe they feel stagnant. So hopefully, even like your newfound excitement in colubrid can in colubrids can help other people. Hopefully, other ball python people watch this and get inspired from this episode, you know? Because that's the reason I wanted to have you on. That's why I think the newly corrupted segment, however often I have this, is good because I think it brings a different side of the coin compared to, you know, the breeder who's been doing this for the
Yeah.
last 5 to 10 years.
It's a different type of conversation. You got 52, 60 episodes up of how to of breeding and knowledge. So it's nice to get a little break
Yeah.
in it. And I think a new person looking and getting interested in the species finds it. I think I hope that we had a conversation that was inspiring to somebody else, and we were able to maybe corrupt another person or two that was listening. So.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, cool, man. I'm gonna throw you in the backstage. I'll run this outro, just hang out for a couple minutes, and I'll be back.
Gotcha. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Brock. Link to Brock's Instagram is in the description below, or Morphinary Arts on Instagram, YouTube, everything like that.
Indeed.
All right. Cool. Talk to you in a minute.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. What another great episode of the Kluber Corruption Podcast here. I hope you all enjoyed this episode tonight. Like I said, I always enjoy talking to Brian. I talk to him every day, but, you know, we could still sit down for an hour and a half and have a good conversation. That's how it is with us. Again, for my ball python people that are potentially watching this, I hope this inspires you to get into colubrids if my previous episodes haven't already. If you're a newer keeper and you're feeling stagnant and you feel like you can't catch up to other people, don't feel that way at all. You're just getting started on your keeping or breeding journey, whatever it is. Just keep the train rolling. Like I said, my DMs are always open if anyone ever has questions about getting into colubrids, what they want to do, and things like that. So, yeah. With that said, first link in the description below goes to the Meteoric Serpents Patreon. Once again, I really appreciate all my Patreon members big time for supporting the show, supporting me. And plus, we have an awesome Discord group chat where we get to talk about all things colubrids and a little bit behind the scenes of what goes on with my collection and early access to pre-recorded episodes, things like that. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe button over here on YouTube. If you're listening to us on Apple or Spotify, please make sure you give a 5-star review on there as well. That's appreciated. Share this out with your friends. Get us to 1,100 subscribers on YouTube. But that's all for tonight, guys. So once again, thank you for tuning in to episode number 63 of the Kluber Corruption Podcast with my buddy Brock of Morphinary Arts. And I will see you guys all next week. Peace out.